The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
Episode number
162.
And if you were to break that down as parents, because usually when somebody looks at your child, they're like, oh, how old is your son or daughter? You're usually like, oh, they're 5 months old, or oh, they're 17 weeks. Officially, episode 162 is 37 months old.
Aww.
It's our little baby is growing so big.
Indeed.
All right. So thank you to everyone who has sent us messages. We say this each and every week.
Yeah.
And we get to celebrate another international message for today.
We do.
So we've had Australia. We've had Brazil. We've had Taiwan. Johnny and Holly, thank you for always having incredible guests. Love that each week it's someone different that encourages us. Keep up the good work. Lauren in Germany from Canada.
Oh, amazing. Lauren, thank you for listening.
Yeah, bonjour.
She's in Germany, not France.
I don't know my German. Sprechen Sie Deutsch. Does that work?
I have no idea.
I don't think that that's right.
I don't think that's a thing.
Nah. All right. Well, hello in the German.
Okay.
That one works even better.
Oh, goodness.
This week we have quite an incredible guest for a Canada Day Wednesday.
Yeah. And it's interesting that we would have someone who's in Germany reach out internationally.
Oh, yeah.
As our guest today has a pretty strong international connection.
Somebody who's sprechen Sie Deutsch. And that would be Mr. Hank Hanegraaff, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm recovering from a 3-year battle with mental cell lymphoma, stage 4 mental cell lymphoma. I went through a transplant, and that transplant seems to have been very, very successful. There's no sign whatsoever that I have mental cell lymphoma today, so I'm grateful to God and to the prayers of God's people.
Well, I want to talk about that. I want to dive into a little bit about, you know, when you got the diagnosis and that. But first, I would like to ask the skill testing question, because we never know where it's going to go. Hank, who are you and where did you come from?
Well, I'm a Dutchman. I was born in Holland in 1950, and we immigrated to the United States, and first to Canada. So I lived in Canada for many years, up until the time I was 14, and then we immigrated to the United States. So I suppose I can say I'm a Dutchman, a Canadian, and now an American.
Well, how old were you then when you did move from Holland to Canada?
When I went from Holland to Canada, I was 3.
Okay.
And so from 3 to 14, I lived in Port Credit, Ontario.
I would almost say that you're more Canadian than you are Dutch.
In some ways, yes, although I still consider Dutch my first language.
That's fair.
I still speak Dutch, and whenever I land in Holland, I feel happy. So that heritage has certainly stayed with me.
Well, we'll welcome you to Canada anytime, and, you know, you can kind of have that second visa if you want.
Yeah, well, I love being in Canada, and I've spent a lot of time in Canada over the years and have a lot of great Canadian friends, and so I do love the country.
So you moved from the booming metropolis of Ontario to then where did you move in the States?
We first moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan. My dad actually was a design draftsman engineer, and he contracted a near-fatal disease. And when he was healed of that, he wanted to move to the United States to go to seminary in order to become a minister. And that's what happened. And so in 1964, right around 1963, 1964, we moved to Canada. He went to seminary. And in fact, I went to school with him. I was in college when he was in seminary.
Was faith always a big part of your life?
Yes, although I will say that I went into a period of practical atheism. I couldn't really make heads or tails out of the concept of God that I grew up with, a God who fatalistically determined people. So either you were born doomed to the womb, from the womb to certain destruction, or you were elect. And I couldn't make heads or tails out of that. And because of that, and because of not receiving good answers to resolving that dilemma, I became a practical atheist, and then I discovered in practical atheism that I hadn't really advanced the ball at all, because in atheism, you are determined by brain chemistry and genetics, so you're still fatalistic. artistically determined. So I did walk away from the faith for a short period of time and then eventually became a Christian as a result of three people that came to my door and witnessed to me. That brought me into the church. It made me open my mind to the whole issue of origins and then to the reliability of Scripture. And finally, to looking at the resurrection. Is the resurrection something that Christ actually experienced, or is it a figment of the imagination of Christians? And if we indeed will rise again from the dead, immortal, imperishable, incorruptible, it changes how we live our life now. If we are destined for eternity, if we will indeed be resurrected as Christ was resurrected, then we'll live our life by a different standard than those who believe that this life is only temporary.
Do you find that it's common that there are people who, I mean, like yourself, kind of walked away, decided that, you know what, I don't need this anymore? Because it seems as though you hear more about the people walking away from faith rather than walking to it.
Yeah, I think that's true. There are a lot of people today that are walking away from the faith, and that is because they're not getting answers to questions that are of transcendent importance. And I think this is one of the reasons that I got involved in apologetics. Being always ready to give an answer, a reason for the hope that lies within me with gentleness and with respect. And I also think that there's an attendant problem. On the one hand, you have people walking away from the faith, but you also have people in the faith who are abdicating their responsibility to be salt and light. So they are not going out and doing the work of evangelism and missions. About 1 year ago today, I went into a coma for 3 days. I was in the hospital. I was receiving a transplant, and I contracted a particular kind of bacterium that caused me to go into a period of being completely unconscious. It was an E. coli bacterium. When I came back to, when I came out of the coma, one of the things I wondered is, what would I say to God if he asked me what I did about the poor and the downtrodden? So this whole issue of missions and evangelism in other parts of the world, as well as in my own neighborhood, became more and more important to me. And since then, I have really focused on what can I do in terms of almsgiving, in terms of missions, in terms of evangelism, not just through the radio broadcast and through podcasts and through my writing, but actually through hands-on personal experience with people.
Did you ever think, I mean, when you were going into seminary, that this was going to be who Hank was, the author, the speaker, the host, the evangelist, the podcaster, and all of that? Is that where you thought God was going to bring you?
You know, my life is unfolded by God's grace and providence. I never expected to write over 25 books. I never expected to be host of a Bible Answer Man broadcast. I never expected to do a Hank Unplugged podcast. All of these things have unfolded in time by God's providence. So I think sometimes we think we can plan it all out, but there is no wisdom, there's no counsel, there's no understanding against the Lord. The horse is prepared for the day of battle, but victory belongs to the Lord. God gives us a pattern of life that we cannot figure out. And it's sort of, I tell my kids oftentimes, I have 12 kids, I tell them that it's so hard to find that needle in the haystack unless you commit your life to the Lord. If you commit your life to the Lord, then the needle comes to you. Then you begin to find the very path that God has given for your life. And then your life begins to have transcendent meaning.
12 kids. Now, usually in Canada, if you have 12 kids, it's because of cold winters, but you grew up in the States. What's your excuse?
Well, it was cold in the United States as well. No, you know, my wife always wanted to have a large family, and we had 9 natural children, and then we adopted 3 children as well. And, you know, that's the great legacy. You know, I think of my legacy being perhaps in writing more than 24 books, but also in a more poignant way in having children who love the Lord and who are a legacy for the future.
They say the apple doesn't fall far from this tree, so do you find that your kids are wanting to follow in your footsteps?
Well, a lot of them are not only following in my footsteps, but when I talk to them, I am absolutely amazed. I think sometimes, wow, how do you know these things? And And one of my sons, David, told me, said, you forget that I sat on the floor in so many speaking engagements all over the world. I sort of learned the faith from the backseat of a pew listening to you speak. And then they have, as I said, in many ways, they have transcended anything that I've done in their own ways, using their own gifts and talents that God has given them.
How old are your kids?
Well, my oldest is 46, and my youngest is now 15.
So, I mean, we hear about this up-and-coming generation and that they're, you know, we talk about this walking away from the faith or not having that faith, or parents are growing up in the church and their kids want nothing to do with that. Why do you think that it is the younger generation that seems to, you know, not want to have anything to do with it?
Well, I think part of it is that we have been intoxicated by the Kool-Aid of the culture, meaning that we drink heavily from the cultural streams, and oftentimes not from a Christian worldview. And so people are not just kids, but the people in general have imbibed the maxims of the culture. They don't know what they believe and why they believe it. Oftentimes they're involved in traditions without having a life. Now, I often have told people, in fact, I wrote a book called Truth Matters, Life Matters More.
Yeah.
I often say to people that outside the truth kept by the whole church, personal experience would be deprived of all certainty. It'd be a mingling of truth and falsehood. But on the other hand, when I say that life matters more, I'm not talking about prohibition on knowledge, but I'm talking about a transcending of knowledge, a transcending of all philosophical speculation. So truth is always, in the last resort, a means. It's a unity of knowledge that subserves an end that transcends all knowledge, and that ultimate end is union with God, or what Peter talks about in 1 Peter, where he talks about deification, being a partaker of the divine nature. And when you're a partaker of the divine nature, then you experience God. You don't just know about God, but you have an experience with God that transforms everything. And I think so often in the church, we have failed to see that the epicenter of the church is a partaking of the graces that transform us from one glory to another. So what most people have in their minds is this idea that Christianity is, well, I'll say a prayer, I get a card now that gets me out of hell and gets me into heaven, and then I live like a baptized secular humanist. But in reality, Christianity, it's not a point in time. It's a process. It's a process of being transformed from one glory to another. And that happens in this life, where we can experience life that is life to the full, not just in the afterlife.
We're in such a weird time because we're dealing with this whole COVID thing and this quarantining and the social distancing and whatever else. Do you find that there's a switch in the teachings and in our focus when it comes to asking you these questions?
I actually think that we're undergoing a great social engineering project. People, you talk about earlier about kids leaving the church. Well, now we're in the process of being separated from church, and it's so easy once you get into that pattern not to go back to church, not to realize, as I was alluding to before, that the church is the epicenter of the universe for a Christian, that you cannot live without the church. You cannot have God as your father without having the church as your mother, because it is in the church that you receive the very graces that transform you. You don't receive those graces outside of the panoply of the church. So often we think that we can have a relationship with God apart from the church, but we really cannot, because it is the church that transforms us.
I want to rewind to the day that you were diagnosed with lymphoma. Is it one of those moments where you'll never forget it, and you kind of remember the day as it was?
I remember that day vividly because I was in the doctor's office with my wife. He came in. He didn't have much of a bedside manner. And he said, you have stage 4 mantle cell lymphoma. And the moment I heard the word stage 4, I immediately deduced that my life was going to end quite quickly. So he started talking to my wife about about chemotherapy regimens and so forth. And as I was listening, I was off in another world. I was sort of thinking, I wonder if I don't go through chemotherapy, how long I will live, and if I'll have enough time to finish the book that I'm working on, and if I'll have enough time to do this, that, and the other thing. I was thinking about all those things, and I sort of tuned out the doctor and my wife as they were talking. And then a little while later, when I sort of came back to the conversation, I said to the doctor, what if I don't go through chemotherapy? How long will I live? And he said, you won't live 6 months. And then I think he realized that I had tuned out with the stage four moniker. And he said, oh, by the way, stage four is not fatal with mantle cell lymphoma. You can survive it. It's possible to survive it. So then, of course, the conversation changed. You know, I just started thinking about what will it take? What will I go through? And he started explaining all those kinds of things. And eventually, I went through a lot of chemotherapy, but the tumors kept coming back. Some of them were visible. I had a big one under my jaw. I had one that popped out of my neck. There was a great big one in my groin area that you could actually see through my clothing. So the only solution left was doing an allogeneic transplant, a transplant where I would receive the blood of another person. And one of my boys ended up donating stem cells. Those stem cells are pretty interesting because what they do is they're transfused into your body, and what has to happen is your blood system, your immune system, has to completely die, and those stem cells have to take over. And it's sort of interesting from a biblical perspective. It reminds me of what John the Baptist said in John 3:30, where he said, he must increase, I must decrease. And that's exactly what had to happen for me. The blood of another person, the immune system of another person, in this case one of my boys, as I mentioned, had to take over completely to the extent that any of my immune system or my blood system remained, I would die. In time, his blood system became my blood system. So I just went through a birthday on June 11. It was my one-year anniversary or my one-year birthday of having a new blood system. It's really considered my new birthday because now I get all the vaccinations that kids get, and because I start really out with a blank slate. But I think the metaphor is very poignant and profound because we also need the blood of Jesus Christ to take over our anatomy from a spiritual standpoint so that I no longer live, but Christ lives in me.
So you have a relationship with God. You get this diagnosis. Was it more, what did you feel more, fear or an excitement because you knew that you would get to see Jesus soon?
Yeah, it's really interesting. No fear whatsoever. I never experienced any period of fear. When I was in the hospital most of last year, I never experienced the pangs of fear, the fear of death. I will tell you, and I alluded to this earlier in our discussion, when I came out of the coma, I did wonder what would I have said to Jesus about what I did for the poor and the downtrodden. Have I done enough in that area? And that has really propelled me towards doing more in missions. And I'll just give you a couple of examples of that. There's a group of people in India. They're known as the Dalits or the Untouchables. In India, as you well know, they have a caste system. And if you are not part of that caste system, if you're a Dalit, if you're an outcast, you can't drink from the wells of people that are part of the caste system. Those people are some 250 to 300 million people strong, most of whom have never heard of Jesus Christ. Those people are today being proselytized by Muslims and Buddhists, and very few Christians are going in and reaching out to those people by building wells for them or by showing the love of Christ and earning the right to share the gospel. And those are the kinds of things that have captured my heart. So in addition to what I'm doing at the Christian Research Institute with respect to apologetics and giving an answer or reason for the hope that lies within me, I'm also very focused on this whole issue of almsgiving and reaching out to the poor and downtrodden, not only in other parts of the world like Southeast Asia, but right here in America.
So book number 25, Truth Matters, Life Matters More. What compelled you to write it?
Because taking a stand for truth opened up a whole area of theology that I was unfamiliar with. It's under the rubric of deification. This is the very thing that Peter talks about, that you and I can be partakers of the divine nature. Now, as I wrote in my first book, Christianity in Crisis, there's a false concept of deification. You can find that in a whole host of New Age constructs. You can find that in the Word of Faith movement, where people are saying that they're gods, and they're misusing the idea of deification. But there's also a true sense in which we can become partakers of the divine nature, not only can but must. And I wrote about that in a section in this book that is titled Deification: Becoming Gods by Grace. So let me explain it to you this way. There's a theologian, Vladimir Lossky, who said the concept of Christianity is so often that after the fall, human history is a long shipwreck awaiting rescue, and that the port of salvation is the goal. But Vladimir Lossky said, no, it is a long shipwreck awaiting rescue, but the port of salvation is not the goal. The goal is the possibility for the shipwreck to resume a journey whose sole goal is union with God. And that's really what I'm talking about. So imagine this. You're on a ship, and you're shipwrecked, and then you're rescued. Well, you would be very grateful that you're rescued from fatality. But you don't want to stay in the port of salvation. You want to continue on with your life. And that's the idea that Vladimir Lossky was communicating. The goal is not just the port of salvation. The goal is to continue on a journey whose sole goal is union with God. And that is the concept of deification that I'm writing about in Truth Matters, Life Matters More.
What's the reaction been to it?
Well, I think it's opened the eyes of a lot of people to a whole new vista, a whole new perspective on Christianity. And that, again, is what I was communicating earlier, not a punctiliar kind of Christianity, where Christianity is a point in time, but rather a process. So the idea is not, I've been saved, but I've been saved, I'm being saved, I will be saved. We're being transformed from one glory to another, which is the very thing that Paul writes about.
Is there a certain focus as to what you want to write about? And do you continually have, I'm going to jot this down because this is going to be my 26th book. This is going to be my 27th book.
No, I've written every single book because I had a passion for writing that book at that particular point in time. So this book came out of my life experience. So I met with a group of people who I thought were cultic at best. They believed that they could become gods. I did not understand that they believed that they could become gods in the proper sense, in the sense that Jesus talked about when he said, I said, you are God. So the truth here is that salvation is so much greater than most people allow themselves to believe. We have been saved not only from sin, but for divine life, and that's the sense of deification that I wanted to explain to people, the sense of deification that this group had embraced. If you properly understood what they had embraced, you would have understood the very thing that Athanasius the Great talked about when he said that we are partakers of the divine nature, that God became man so that men might become God, or as Luther said, word became flesh so that flesh might become word. That's the idea of being saved for divine life, that God has shared his inner life with us and made us partakers of that inner life. One of the things that captivated me that was transformative in my own life, I started realizing that the Eucharist was not something that I did for God, but something that God was doing for me, that the Eucharist was the real presence of Christ being infused into my life so that I could be transformed. And I wanted to write about that. So I had spent my whole career on defining truth, debating truth, defending truth, but now I wanted to say there's something more than truth, and that we can experience that not just in the afterlife, but now, in the present.
We talk about those hills and valleys in life, where we're on the mountaintops and in the valleys, where we look to God and we're saying, God, why me? Why am I put into this position? Have you ever had one of those why me moments where you're asking God that question?
I think when we go through the exigencies of life, that is a natural reaction, and I'm not immune from having that reaction from time to time. But I have understood the bigger picture, that God puts you through these circumstances so that there's a better outcome. Charles Haddon Spurgeon said, "Were you ever in the melting pot, dear friends? I have been there, and my sermons with me, the result of melting is that we arrive at a true valuation of things, and then we are poured out in new and better fashion." And then he said we can almost wish for the melting pot so that we might be refined, so that we might be made pure, so that we might be poured out in new and better fashion. That's the way we have to look at the difficulties of life. Difficulties we will never be immune from. So it's not a matter of whether or not we're going to have challenges. It's a matter of dealing with those challenges through faith in God. But if you want to get rid of challenges, the only way to do it is to die. But if you go through life, those challenges transform you and help you see a bigger picture.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More, which is available now at Bible Answer Man on Insta. You can go to at Hank Hanegraaff as well on Twitter. My friend, you know, I got a lot of reading to do. You've definitely given us some homework, but I appreciate you taking some time and having a conversation today.
It was nice to talk to you. Truth Matters, Life Matters More. I'm talking about the unexpected beauty of an authentic Christian life.
Thank you again to Mr. Hank Hanegraaff for taking some time, and thank you to everybody who has a chance to listen. We say make suggestions. We love to hear those suggestions. You do those reviews on places like Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And it's kind of nice just to, yes, read the reviews, but have these relationships.
Absolutely. So messages often, make sure you subscribe, tell a friend, and hopefully they'll hear some that encourages them when they're going through one of the valleys in their lives.
We're in a weird time at this moment, pandemic-ies and COVIDs and social distancings and whatever else. But it's kind of nice that, we still have things like the internet. We still have things like podcasts and radio and that can kind of keep us all together and keep some normalcy, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So again, make sure you download or check out faithstrongtoday.com.